We're in part three of a series called Hello, My Name is Yahweh, and we're asking this question: what is God like? And I know this is like a special Sunday because the middle hires and the high schoolers are both here, and so most of you guys don't know what we've been talking about, so I'll do a quick recap. But the question is this: what is God like? And if I were to ask 100 people what God is like, I might get 100 different answers, right? So the better question to ask is this: what does God say God is like? Because believe it or not, in the Bible, there is one verse where God describes himself. And you would think, you know, the Bible starts with Genesis and ends with Revelation, that he would probably introduce himself in Genesis, but he doesn't do that. He doesn't describe himself until the book of Exodus. And in the book of Exodus, it's under certain special circumstances that God's like, okay, let me tell you, let me give you a list of words. Excuse me. Woo, okay. Let me give you a list of words that describes who I am. And this is found in Exodus chapter 34, 6 through 7. If you want to read it, you can. And this is the most quoted verse by other biblical authors, right? So Isaiah quotes this verse a lot. There are psalmists who quote this verse a lot. A lot of the prophets quote this verse. So this seems to be a very, very foundational verse to discovering who God is. Now, if you're wondering, why does it take God, whole book of Genesis, and the first 33 chapters of Exodus to even get to introducing himself? Well, here's the situation that we find ourselves in the book of Exodus. So here's a little animation. So we have Israelites in Egypt who are enslaved, right? And they're crying out to God, God, please, you know, help us. What, you know, please save us. We need help. Okay. Meanwhile, there's a guy by Mount Sinai. His name is Moses. He used to live in Egypt. He ran away because he accidentally killed somebody. And one day he's tending his sheep. And then next slide, he sees a burning bush. I was like, oh, that's an interesting bush. It's burning and it's not being consumed. What's going on? Then he hears a voice. God's like, I want you to go back to Egypt and save these people. So next slide. So Moses, he runs off to Egypt, comes here. And, you know, he does, I'm condensing the long story. So he's like, let my people go, Pharaoh. Pharaoh's like, no. And he does that several times. Eventually, Pharaoh's like, okay, fine. So next slide. I know that is just like, ooh. Okay, so they take off. They go through the Red Sea, or the Sea of Reeds. They go through, and they come to where Moses started. Now, it's interesting because at this point in the story, the language in which God relates to his people starts to change. He starts using wedding language. Right? He uses words like, we need to dwell together. And these are words that they used back then to talk about how, you know, like two people get married. Actually, as a matter of fact, even today in Jewish weddings, they would use some of these symbols here to talk about their own wedding ceremony. So like, for example, they would have four sticks with like a white sheet on top, and they would consider that to be the cloud that covered the Israelites during this journey. So it's like really interesting. Anyways, the point here is that this is supposed to be like a wedding ceremony. And in a wedding ceremony, there's a few things that needs to happen. Number one is that the two have to come and dwell together. And the second thing is they write up a marriage contract. So up on the clouds, there's like thunder. And God's like, come up here. You know, we're going to be married. Come on up here. And the Israelites like, no, thank you. We're fine down here. That's kind of scary. And, you know, we didn't know we were going to get married. So the Israelites are like, okay, Moses, how about you go by yourself? So next slide. So Moses, hearing this, kind of discouraged, he's like, okay, fine, I'll go up there. And so he gets up to the top where that's covered in cloud, and God's like, well, where is everybody? Like, well, they're kind of scared of you, so I'm here representing them. And he becomes like this mediator character. And while he's up there, God's like, okay, we'll start a marriage ceremony. And so remember the two things? First thing is you need to dwell together. So God's like, okay, well, I want to live with you guys, but they're all down there. So I'm going to give you some detailed instructions on how to build my house, aka a tent. That's called the tabernacle. So he spends chapter after chapter talking about how he wants it decorated, what material to use, all that stuff, right? So he spends a lot of time telling Moses, like, Moses, are you writing this down? It's like, yeah. You know, he's like writing it down. Okay, next thing. Second thing is we need a marriage contract. What does that look like? Next slide. So God gives him these tablets called the Ten Commandments. If we're going to make this work, here are some ground rules that this relationship is going to be based on. We call that a covenant now. But anyways, so while this is happening, and this is taking a lot of time to happen, meanwhile, next slide, down at the mountain, these people are like, you know, Moses has been gone for a while. How many days has it been? like, I think it's been about like, they didn't have watches, but they're like, oh, I think it's about like 40 days. I'm like, oh, did Moses leave us? Well, what about Yahweh? What about God? Where is he? It's like, well, the cloud's still there, but there's no evidence that he's here with us. And they start to get worried. So what do? They're like, then what we need to do is we have to recreate God. And the way they do that, next slide, is that they build for themselves a golden calf. Now, golden calf is not a separate God from the God that's up in the cloud, right? This golden calf is their version of what they think God is like. So just imagine, this is a wedding ceremony. And in the middle of the ceremony, the people who are supposed to marry God, they are thinking, I'm just going to make our own version of the person we're supposed to marry. Like, how offensive is that? So anyways, next slide. Moses comes down eventually from the cloud. You know, he's like, hey, I come bearing gifts. And he's like, what in the world is going on? He's like, you know how offensive this is to God? Like, you know that he rescued you? You know he's been feeding you? You know that he took care of Pharaoh for you? Like, he's been trying to woo you over this whole time. Like, guys, he gave me instructions to build a tent so he could live with you guys. Like, what are you guys doing down here, right? And so out of frustration, Moses is like, this marriage covenant? So next slide. So he throws the Ten Commandments and he destroys the golden calf because he's frustrated. Now, long story short, he goes back up the mountain, he gets another pair, comes back down. But when he comes down, next slide, he decides, like, he's so discouraged, he comes down here, builds his own little tent, not the tent that God told him to build. And God's like, okay, I'll dwell with you, Moses. These people, they don't seem that interested, so it's just you and me. Now, while that's happening, Moses is having second thoughts. He's like, wait a minute, God. You asked me to come out here and rescue these people with you out of slavery so that we could dwell together and go into the world together. Just you and me, one-on-one, that was not our deal. Our deal was with everybody else. But God's like, but they don't want to be with me. They don't want to, like, everything they've done so far seems like, it seems contrary to somebody who would want to be together with me. But Moses is like, wait a minute. I never asked you this question, but who are you? I just assumed that you were this loving God that wants to take care of us and rescue us, but now you're talking about abandoning these people in the middle of the desert? And so Moses gets the courage and says, show me who you are. Because if you're not who I thought you were, then I don't want to go with you either. Show me your glory. And so God's like, okay, if you really want to know who I am, the next morning, when you wake up tomorrow morning, I want you to get out of your tent, go to the other side of the mountain, and I will show you who I am. So next morning, next slide, Moses goes to the other side of the mountain, and he's like really nervous, like, oh boy, I'm gonna see God. And then God's like, oh, I can't show you everything I am because then I'm like too holy, you'll disintegrate. So I'll show you the trails of me, which a lot of Hebrew scholars are trying to figure out what that really means. Even today, we don't know, but I'm just gonna represent it with light. So next slide. It's like, okay, so he sees God's glory. And while that's happening, he hears the voice of God, and that's Exodus 34, and this is how that goes. The Lord, or if in your Bible, if you see the word Lord in all caps, it's basically saying Yahweh, Yahweh, the compassionate, the gracious, and slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin. So here's the list. The list, next, here we go, is compassionate, gracious, slow to anger, abounding in love, faithful. Okay, so these are the things that God used. These are the words that he used to describe himself. I don't know how you would describe yourself in five words or less, but these are the five that he used. Last week on Mother's Day, we talked about the first one, which was compassionate. And we learned that the word compassionate, do you guys remember the Hebrew word for compassionate? Rahum? Yeah, okay. It's okay, you don't listen to me, it's okay. As long as you don't fall asleep on me, then I'm not offended. Okay, remember, the word rahum comes from the Hebrew word for womb. It's a motherly term, right? And the first word that God uses to describe himself is like, I love you as a mother cares for her child, okay? Today we're looking at the second word, which is, the second word is gracious, and this is what it looks like. And the word here is chaum. Kanum. Okay, now you don't have to know that because this is an adjective. We're going to be looking at the noun form of this, which is grace. And that word is the word chen. Let me hear you say chen. Yeah, you got a thing. Oh yeah, chen. Okay, that means grace. Now, If you've been in church for a while, you know that the word grace has been used way too many times that it's lost its meaning, right? In the English language, when we use the word grace, we use it in like, I don't know, like, oh, let's say grace before we eat, right? Or let's, oh, you have graced us with your presence. Or, oh man, that guy, when that guy dances, he's so graceful. Or, you know, I don't know how you use word grace. Like, show me some grace. Let's pretend that we never heard the word grace before, because today what we're going to do is we're going to be building from scratch the definition for what grace is in by looking at how it's used in the Bible. Are we cool with that? Okay, let's do this. So the first place I'm going to take you is Psalm chapter 45. Let's see how the word chen is used here. My heart is stirred by a noble theme as I recite my verses for the king. My tongue is the pen of a skillful writer. Now, the scene, if this makes it sound like there's a jester that's like in the middle of a king's courtyard and the king is sitting on the throne and you're like, may I recite to you, you know, how wonderful you are. That's exactly what's happening here, okay? So this is what this jester would say. You are the most excellent of men, which in Hebrew that means like you're the best looking dude I've ever seen, okay? It's like you are so handsome and your lips have been anointed with chen. There it is right there. Since God has blessed you forever. Okay, so this is what he's saying. O king, you are the best looking dude I've ever seen. Nobody here matches your beauty, okay? And then the second thing he says, and when you speak, your voice, it makes all people in the world want to lean in and hear your voice more and more. Like when you speak, we all just melt like butter, you know, right? It's like when Guy sings, like, it's like, oh, everyone's like, oh, right? Okay. So here the word chen means delightful, beautiful, something good. Okay, that's what grace means here. So like when I hear you speak, it's like a gift to my ears. My ears are happy when you speak. Okay? So that's one use of the word chen in the Bible. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 1. Here's another use of chen. This is, the book of Proverbs is basically a list of wisdom, literature. It's like great advice, okay? Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Like, listen to what your parents are teaching you. This is so important. They are a garland of chen, your head, a garland to chen, your head, and a chain to adorn your neck. Like, when you listen to the advice and the instruction of your parents, it's as wonderful as somebody putting a floral crown on your head and you look beautiful. Okay, so what he's saying is, chen is like, you look, it's like when I look at you, it's like a gift to my eyes. Okay, so chen is like a gift to your ears, gift to your eyes. It's just a gift. It's an ornament, in this case, that makes your head look beautiful, right? Like an earring or a necklace or whatever, right? Whatever you put on yourself, it makes you look even more beautiful. That's what chen is, okay? Now, in case you guys are like, what is, I still don't get it. Okay, so chen, okay, just think about it this way. Chen is beauty and delight. So every time you see the word chen, think about that. Now, some of you are like, I still am trying to conceptualize what that would look like today. I found a perfect video clip for you guys. As you guys know, ever since my son started playing baseball, I'm starting to get more into baseball too. And a few years ago, we were watching baseball, and I saw this thing that I was like, that is the most gracious, like, it's so wonderful, so beautiful. Okay, I want to show you this. Let's see, there's no audio, so you can just watch this. Okay, so there's Will Smith that's at bat. They pitch the ball. There's somebody on second base right here. His name is Trey Turner. He's running to third, and now he's running to home, and he slides. Whoa, did you see that? Now, it's so good that this channel decided to put that on repeat over and over from different angles, because, dude, did you see that? Look. He slides, and he walks off like, no biggie, right? No big deal, right? Thank you, Trey Turner, for that beautiful thing. Like, my eyes were so blessed. I wanted to see it over and over again. Okay, so this, what you just saw right here, is a gift to my eyes. You can say that slide was chen, okay? So when you see something that makes you say, like, wow, I could watch that forever. It's like my eyes are thanking me for being alive because it was like the best thing I've ever seen, right? That's chen. Okay? And last week, when you guys heard the men and the youth and the children sing, especially when Alan, you know, sang his solo, and then Siddhartha sang his solo, and then Danny and Guy, and then Luke, you did your awesome closer, right? That was a chen, a gift to my ears, right? Thank you. Okay. Or when my kids tell me about their passion, like, oh man, I love doing, like, my son, like, I love baseball, or when my daughter's like, I like anything that looks like a Sanrio character, and I'm like, oh, look at them so happy. That is a chen, it's a gift to my heart. I'm like, oh, I could hear them talk about what they love all day long. It just makes me so happy. It fills my heart, right? Or when I hear about how some of you are experiencing God's goodness in your life, that is a chen, that is a gift to my soul. That's what chen is. So a chen, I'm starting to hurt back here. Beautiful and delightful gift. It's a gift. We are better off for the gift that you've given me, my eyes, my ears, my heart, sometimes my appetite. You make something delicious, I eat it, I'm like, whoa, that's chen, that's so good, right? But this is an incomplete definition of grace. Because when you read the Bible and you see examples of the word chen being used everywhere, you start to discover that there's something else that's attached to just it being a gift. Because what you discover is every time there's chen in the scriptures, there's always something that follows it. So scholars are like, well, maybe this isn't the complete definition. Maybe this is a little bit longer, right? And so the long one is, it's that beautiful and delightful gift that is reciprocated. Reciprocated, okay? That means because of the gift, it affects somebody else. Because of the gift that God has given me, it causes me to behave a different way. Like, there's something that changes because of the gift. Here's an example that might not be good. I know I can't relate to it, but I'm using myself as an example here. Okay, so here we go. Let's just say there's two people. Let's say this is me. Okay, and that person over there is somebody I just met on the street the other day, I don't know, right? And then, as we're hanging out, just standing, we're just gonna know each other, all of a sudden, next slide, this guy over here, he starts to dance. Now, me seeing that, I'm like, that is a beautiful dance. That's a Macarena, by the way. I'm like, I need to do the running man, right? Because I'm like, the world is better for that. And somebody's walking by, and he's like, look at these guys dance. I'm gonna dance too. And before you know it, like, more and more people are like, I need to be a part of this party too. The moonwalk, yeah. There's one thing that happened, and I saw that as a gift to my eyes, and I reacted to it. I wanted to be a part of it. So I started doing the same thing or something similar, right? And then somebody saw me doing it, and they're like, I want to be a part of that beauty. And so they start doing it, and then other people start joining in, and before you know it, the whole world is dancing. Okay, it went from a bleak world to an inspiring world. Maybe you painted something and you saw, and somebody saw it and said, that just inspires me. It compels me to do something. And they go and do something beautiful. That's chen. So chen is a gift that compels others to participate in creating more beauty in the world. That's what grace is, okay? So I'll give you some more examples in the Bible. There's a book in the Bible early on. It's called the Book of Esther. It's one of the only two books in the Bible that's named after a female. And Esther is supposed to be beautiful because the story starts off with her winning a beauty pageant. Now, she's a Jewish girl living in a different world that is ruled by non-Jewish people. And so the king, who's not Jewish, sees this girl and says, hey, I want to marry you because you're so hot. You know, so he marries her. But little do we find, not too far into the story, we find out there's this evil guy, like an advisor to the king. His name is Haman. He's kind of like the Jafar of the story, if you know Aladdin, okay? Haman is like, we don't like Jews. We're going to annihilate all of them. Now, when Esther hears about this, and by the way, Esther's name is not a Hebrew name, right? Because she's hiding her identity. But anyways, so Haman is like trying to destroy the Jews. Esther finds out that her people are in danger. So what does Esther do? She cooks her husband a meal, right? She dresses herself up and she presents herself to the king and says, look, I made you a meal, right? Here's a gift, a chen to your tummy, right? And a chen to your eyes and maybe soft voice, I don't know, a chen to your ears, right? And the king looks at it and says, this is such a gift to all my senses. Like, I have received grace from my wife. Now I feel like I want to do something good. Is there anything I could do for you, my wife? And she's like, yeah, you know, there's this guy that's trying to annihilate my people. Can you make sure that doesn't happen? And King's like, done, right? Like that's the story of Esther, by the way. Okay, but do you see how Hen usually brings about this behavior that makes you want to contribute to the good of the world? It makes you feel like you want to do something about it. Are you guys following? Another story with Hen is the story of Jacob. Now, I'm bringing this story up because this is actually a really strange story, because Hen in this situation doesn't do what it's supposed to do, okay? And this is important, and you'll see why in a second. Okay, so here's a little, we're gonna read a few verses, but before we get there, I wanna catch you up on the story. Jacob is born with a twin, okay? Now, his twin's name is Esau, and Esau is born like a split second before Jacob is. And because he's technically the older one, he's the favorite of the dad, and he's like, everything I have when I die is gonna be yours. Like, the will is like Esau, no Jacob, right? Now, Jacob and his mom are not happy about this. So Jacob is like, and his mom are like, let's find a way so that dad will give you the inheritance instead of your brother. So mom's like, okay, this is what we're going to do. You're going to deceive your dad. You know, you're going to pretend like you're Esau, and then he's going to give you everything, and then you run away. Great idea, mom. So he does that, and he takes everything that's important to Esau away from him, and then he takes off. And he doesn't see his brother for 20 years, right? And the reason is because the last words of Esau is like, you took everything from me, I'm gonna kill you. So yeah, of course he's gonna be gone for 20 years. He's gone for 20 years, but eventually he feels like he needs to come back home. So as he's coming back home and he's approaching Esau's territory, Jacob is like, how am I supposed to face the guy that I betrayed 20 years ago? It's like, I know. I'm gonna send some gifts ahead of me, so it'll cause Hen, like he'll see my gift and he'll be like, oh, brother, okay, come here. Like, it compels me to do something good, right? So what does he do? He's like, well, what's beautiful? And in Jacob's eyes, the beautiful thing is flocks of sheep. Now, I don't know if you think sheep are beautiful, but Jacob thinks so, okay? So he sends the sheep ahead of him, and this is how Esau responds. Esau asked, what's the meaning of all these flocks and herds I met? Like, bah, like, what is going on, right? Jacob's response, to find hen, the word translated as favor here in the English, to find hen in your eyes, my Lord. So what he's saying is, I know what I deserve, I don't want that, so I'm hoping that he would change his mind by me giving him grace, me giving him a gift, something beautiful, something delightful. His response? Esau said, I already have plenty, my brother, keep what you have for yourself. It's like, it didn't work. Oh no. Like, I just sent you like a bunch of stuff and that was supposed to, you know, soften your heart and be like, oh brother, come here. Didn't work, right? It's like, oh, please no. If I have found favor, hen, in your eyes, accept this gift from me, please. You have to accept it because I need you to forgive me. So there is actually a problem with hen. And the problem with hen is this. The problem with hen is, what happens if the gift I bring is not delightful or beautiful to the other person? Like, hey, look, I brought you some sheep. Great, I got 100 over here. Like, oh, like, what do you give somebody who has everything, right? Like, you know, you heard people say things like, oh, can you please pick me because I'll be your best friend. It's like, I already have a best friend and I don't want you as my best friend. Like, it's like, okay, so that gift didn't work, right? Like, what do you do? Right, because it turns out, like, okay, next slide. What happens when somebody starts dancing and I'm here kind of like, huh, what, huh? I don't get it, I kind of weird, I'm gonna back up, you know, like, what happens when this happens? Because in order for the world to be beautified, in order for God's kingdom to spread into the world, I know he's sad, but in order for the world to become a better place, to create God's kingdom here on earth, something beautiful has to be here. But what if that beautiful thing, I mean, what we've learned so far is the way that beauty is born in this world is a reaction to something else that's beautiful, right? If you want to pass on a candle light to somebody, somebody has to light the candle and pass it on to somebody else, and that person passes it on to somebody else before the whole room is bright enough that you can see, right? But what if the first candle is not lit? What if the beautiful gift that you bring into the world is not beautiful in the eyes of somebody else, right? If grace is spread through experiencing its beauty, how can it spread if its beauty is not compelling? Because what you consider beautiful might not be what somebody else might think is beautiful. I mean, you can even bring the good news of Jesus and say, hey, you know how beautiful Jesus is? He died on the cross, he suffered, and he loves you, and all that kind of stuff, right? And some of you are like, cool, but not for me, man, and just walks away. Like, what happens when something is not beautiful? You drew something, you painted something, you think this artwork, this song, this poem is gonna change the world, and nobody cares to listen to it or look at it. What do? And that's the nature of chen. Here's a scholar, Timothy Mackey. This is what he says. The focus of chen is not just the object of favor, right? It's not just the sheep that's supposed to be the object here, but how that object is perceived by the eyes of the observer, right? Meaning, Jacob thought it was a beautiful gift, but Esau's like, yeah, I'm okay. It's subjective. But here's the thing. Here's the good news, okay? While Jacob thought it was beautiful and Esau said it's not that beautiful, the opposite is also true. What Esau doesn't think is beautiful could be beautiful in somebody else's eyes. Okay? So, I know that's like not a big deal. Okay, let's go back to the Moses story and I'm going to tie all the loose ends together here. Okay, next slide. Moses comes down and he looks at these people who have cheated on God, right? God has rescued these people. He listened to their prayers. He listened to their cries. He fed them along the way, and all they did was complain. Eh, we want something else to eat. We want something else to eat. Please behave. No, we don't want to. We don't want to, right? Oh, I'm going to marry you. He's like, well, we're going to create a cow here, and we think that's like you. Ha, 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 right? Like, it's like offensive. Anybody else from the outside looking at this scenario would probably, next slide, would be like, these guys, not beautiful, not delightful. We're on God's side here. If God wants to abandon them, I'm right there with you. Like, we're good. You know, like, I'm not going to be mad at you, God, for doing that. But, look, that's our subjective view of what's going on here, right? But from God's perspective, what we don't see as beautiful, next slide, God looks at them and says, no. They are beautiful. Well, how can you look at it that way, God? We just saw what they did to you. No, we think, like, God's like, I think these people are beautiful. Why? What compelled God to show humanity grace? Like, let's just say you're like this alien that came into our world, and you look at everything, and you're like, wow, these people are just nasty people. These people, like, they're always fighting, they're always violent, they're always mean to somebody, blah, 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 right? From their perspective, the world is a very nasty place, but God, like, from their perspective, it's like the sheep, like how Esau sees the sheep. It's like, there's nothing special about these people. But from God's perspective, like Jacob, he sees them and says, no, no, they're actually beautiful, right? If grace is something that is birthed from seeing something and saying, that is so beautiful, that compels me to do something beautiful in this world, what is the thing that compels God to do something beautiful? God chose to see the beauty in humanity even in our vilest moments. Think about this. If grace is birthed and only spread by seeing something else that's beautiful, and there's nothing beautiful around us, where does grace come from? What is the inspiration that God draws on to show beauty to the world? He says, I look at everything that people will consider to be ugly, and I find something beautiful in that. And that moves God to show grace to the world, right? So because he sees the beauty in you, like even you're like, there's nothing lovable about me. God's like, no, I see something in you that's lovable. And that makes me want to do something good in this world. And because of that, it leads to that behavior, that beauty compelled God to show us grace. So from our perspective, it feels like, oh, God just loves me no matter what. But what's actually happening behind the scenes is God is looking at you and saying, I know most people don't think much about you, but I see something in there that's of value. And that just makes me want to do something good. And now we're receiving God's grace. When there's no beauty in the world, God chooses to find beauty in everything. And because of that, he shows grace on us. I know this is kind of complicated, this is like philosophical. God will always initiate chen by choosing to see the hand in us. So what does this mean for us? What does this mean for us? Have you ever been in a situation where you're at odds with somebody? We were talking about baseball a few minutes ago. Let's just say like, hey, you're a, I don't know, what's the opposing team for the Dodgers? Huh? Padres? Okay, you see a Padres fan and you're a Dodgers fan and you're like, there's nothing good about this person. And the person over here is like, there's nothing good about this person. As a follower of Jesus, as a follower of God who sees the beauty in the things that nobody sees beauty in, and in response to that, you will look at the person and say, hey, you love baseball. That's great. You know, I don't know. Think of something, like find the positive in the midst of nothingness, right? And say, hey, I noticed how passionate you are for your team. I wish more people were passionate about their team and have so much pride in their team like you did. And so you see, what I'm doing is I found something that's beautiful and I drew it out and I reacted to it. And now because I poured grace on this person is receiving that grace, is like, I feel compelled to return that grace to the world. Do you see what's happening here? Or maybe not sports, let's talk about politics for a second, right? You're on opposite sides of the aisle and there's nothing good that you see in the other person. But you could say, hey, you know, while you don't really see anything beautiful, you're like, but I'm like digging deep and you're like, I see something that's a beauty. Let me pull that out and dwell on it. Oh, that just speaks to me. That is so beautiful. And so you say a compliment based on that. And this person's like, well, thank you for the grace. And now you feel compelled to spread that grace, because grace by nature is supposed to be reciprocated and it gets multiplied. Whenever you're in a situation where you're like, I'm not gonna say something nice until this person says something nice, right? And you just kind of wait and wait and wait the whole time. What God does is he is the initiator. He looks at it and says, I'll do the hard work of looking for the beauty. And when I see it, I will start this chain of grace into the world. And as followers of Jesus, we are called to do that. So when Moses says, who are you? And the second word on the list is, I am a God of grace. I'm gracious. What he's saying is, I'm a God, no matter how many times you try to break my heart, Israelites, you know, you've done that so many times already. I choose to find the beauty in you and respond to you with beauty, hoping that these people at the bottom of the mountain would say, wow, look at how much grace this God has given me. It's my turn to show grace to the world. Amen? All right, let's pray.